The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Iran's parliament votes to execute 15,000 protesters. Let me say that one more time, folks. Execute, as in kill, 15,000 protesters to teach hard lesson. Iranian lawmakers in recent days call for strict punishment for the protesters who have been arrested on Monday. CNN reported that a letter signed by 227 members of Iranian parliament, this is not 20, this is not 40, this is 227 Iranian parliament, urged that the protesters be given harsh punishment that would serve as a good lesson in the shortest possible time. On Tuesday, parliament did just that, voting to impose the death penalty on all protesters in custody as a hard lesson for all rebels.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, you heard yesterday about the Iranian protests going on across the country. What we did not tell you, and what is now being reported, and I had to double check these numbers this morning because I couldn't believe what I heard, that in the wake of these protests, 15,000 people are sentenced to death. They arrested 15,000 people. Over 14,000 was my last report. It's up to 15,000 now. This began after a woman died in police custody after being beaten for not wearing her head covering correctly, right? And then the Iranian parliament is elected to, you know, we need to crack down even harder. We cannot have people going to the streets. You saw what the Iranian soccer team did. You see what people are doing. So they voted Tuesday to execute 15,000 protesters who've been arrested. Imagine that's your daughter, your son, your wife, your husband. Can you imagine that? Your mom, your dad? They're going to die. You know, for what? For what? Right? For what? It's really insane. News that the vast majority of the Iranian parliament signed a letter encouraging the government to give the protesters the hardest penalties possible, including the death penalty. Now, Newsweek reported that there are 15,000 people that are right now in custody because of the protests. It's not clear how many of them are facing charges that would involve the death penalty. However, the group, Iran Human Rights, warned that at least 20 protesters are currently facing charges punishable by death. So we don't know how many will go to death. I can't imagine them executing 15,000 people. But again, as you heard in that piece of audio we just ran, CNN was reporting that the Iranian parliament has passed, you know, a law, you know, wanting the harshest penalties possible, including the death penalty for people. So we'll see. Pray. I think all eyes are on Iran right now. I hope we're doing everything we can behind the scenes to help, you know, encourage protesters and hopefully bring about a regime change in a nation that wants a nuclear weapon that has threatened to destroy Israel and wipe them off the face of the planet, and who are oppressing not just women but their own people. And it really is tragic. We live in the greatest nation in the world. You know, we should be proud to be Americans. We should be proud of our First Amendment and all the rights that we do have. It saddens me a little bit when I see the direction this country is coming, because we really are a light on a hill. You know, we've got to continue to be that, right? Our founding fathers knew this. You know, this great experiment known as America would succeed if it was based on a virtuous people. And we've got to get back to virtue. You know, I've said to my wife yesterday, as I was watching the Chinese protests and riots, people throwing stuff and destroying things and cries, you know, people fed up with the lockdown and the COVID mandates from their government. When I saw what was happening in Iran, you know, I just think, gosh, we are so blessed, really, to be in America. We take for granted so many of the wonderful freedoms that we have, right? And yet we're going down an immoral path. You take a look at the Respect for Marriage Act. You take a look at, you know, all this garbage about reproductive freedom and redefinition of marriage. And yeah, I'm not going to give you the litany. You know it, right? But we're going down a path that leads away from God, that leads away from virtue. And in the end, we are going to suffer as a result of that. You know, we're not stronger because of that. We're weaker because of that. You know, so I need you to be a person who says, Drew, I'm going to pray, because that's really what I think God has allowed the Virgin Mary in all of her apparitions to come here to remind us of the need to pray, to grow in that virtue, to return to her son, Jesus. When we do that, things will fall into place. I was thinking about another country, Nicaragua. We talked about the dictator down there, Daniel Ortega. I can't get his name out of my mouth. you know, you take a look at these dictators. What the heck's going on with them? He's persecuting the church in his own country. Did you hear the latest about what he was doing? He's supposedly right now, he's prohibited the parish of San Jose de Tipitapa to in the Archdiocese of Managua. He's not allowing them to have their Immaculate Conception procession. No procession. Can't have it. Right? The parish had planned a full program on Monday, and it concludes on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, December 8th, right? They have daily masses. They're singing the Salve Regina. They recite the rosary. There's preaching on Marian themes. They're praying the novena to the Immaculate Conception. That's all good stuff, right? What harm is that going to bring about, right? Well, he has prohibited the parish from that planned procession, and they're not allowed to bring their faith out into the streets. And this is just the latest action taken by Ortega against the church. But, you know, Our Lady will show up. Maggie was saying to me, you know, Drew, I think the lady somehow will intervene. And it really is true. In Manila, when the Marcos regime was in decline, they had sent out protesters, went to the streets, and they had this big rosary crusade. They had rosaries in hand, and they were praying. And the military troops were ordered to fire on the people. And they saw, this is a true story, they saw a towering figure, a woman, behind. They saw the Blessed Mother. She appeared. These guys in their tanks and the military personnel, they dropped their weapons. They got out. They joined this march. And, of course, we saw the regime ultimately fall. Our Lady intercedes. And so in the former Ukraine, under communist reign, you know, when communism, when it was the USSR, same thing happened. People go to open field shrines to pray, to celebrate Mass in secret. And the Virgin Mary would appear as a towering figure. In the heart of Egypt, in a place called Zaytun in 1968, for 2 years, the Virgin Mary appeared visibly to Muslims, to Orthodox Jews, to Christians, to Catholics in that community. And of course, in Batania, Venezuela, Our Lady came as a reconciler of peoples and nations and was witnessed by I can't tell you how many thousands of people have visibly saw the Virgin Mary there. That church received formal church approval. So to Maggie's point, Our Lady is our spiritual mother, and there's no doubt in my mind she is interceding. But boy, do we need her today, because our country's dedicated to her, right? The United States of America is dedicated to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. She is our patroness. And you think about where she appeared in Guadalupe, Mexico. She appeared in the geocenter of the Americas, north and south. So she's, again, showing us her motherhood there. Well, we need her because you know what's happening? The Senate voted yesterday to approve the so-called Respect for Marriage Act. They did it without the necessary protections for religious liberty. And there's a provision in there that says that religious ministers can't be forced to witness the so-called weddings of same-sex couples. There's also a provision that explicitly forbids polygamy. But if you are a small business owner, you're catering weddings, they're going to say, you know, like they say in New York, forget about it. You got to be there. You got to do it. I don't care what you think. And that's what's happening, right? That's what is going to happen. Here's a little bit more from CBS News. Listen to this.
The bill, as amended, has passed.
Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin is the first openly gay senator in U.S. history and sponsored the legislation to codify marriage protections into federal law. The bill does not legalize same-sex marriage nationwide, but does require the federal government and states to recognize legal same-sex and interracial marriages performed in other states. It also includes religious liberty protections, but Republicans were split.
This legislation will put the weighty thumb of government on the scale against religious organizations and individuals.
The vote was prompted after the overturning of Roe versus Wade, sparking fears same-sex marriage rights could be next.
The House has already passed a similar measure and will take up the Senate version as early as next week. There's been a real push by Democrats to try to get this done now during the lame duck session before Republicans take over the House majority next year, which could make it tougher to pass.
You know, the senator from Utah, Mike Lee, he proposed an amendment that would have granted real religious freedom protections, but the proposal was shot down. Check out how close it was, 48-49. And he said this. He said, quote, "The only outcome we can expect from this legislation is for religious individuals, businesses, and institutions to spend more time and more money defending God-given rights in court. And you know what? I think that might be part of the strategy. You know, it's probably what's going to happen. One final news story here, and I'll bring you up on speed on something just a little bit darker. I almost don't want to talk about it, but before I get to what's happening in the country that I want to make you aware of, I just want to bring you abroad to the G20. Their meeting that they had a couple weeks ago in Bali. Remember that? They had delegates of the 20 richest countries on earth. Well, they agreed to move forward. This is going to affect you. They've agreed to move forward with steps requiring vaccine passports. I don't know whether you're vaccinated or not. You might say, hey, that's great. I've got my vaccine. You might say, what does that mean for my travel, right? The delegate from Indonesia said this, and I'll quote him. They said, let's have a digital health certificate acknowledged by the World Health Organization. So if you've been vaccinated or tested properly, then you can move around. Then you can move around. So I'm saying, look, you know, we are becoming a biotech state. That's what we're beginning to see. So they're going to take this proposal to the next meeting of the World Health Assembly. It's an attempt to get it added to the current international health regulations. If that happens, then it's going to become legally binding in about 196 countries that are signatories to those regulations. But that includes the U.S. So, I don't know. I'd love to travel, right? What if, and here's the thing, what if there's a vaccine that comes out that you don't want, right? What if there's a vaccine? Maybe you said, oh, I took COVID, I'm fine. What if there's something in the future? I'm looking down the road. What will this mean to your ability to freely move? What if you want to go on a pilgrimage or a vacation outside the U.S.? You need to show proof of vaccination against whatever the current threat or disease is. And there'll be new ones. It's an inevitability. Otherwise, you can't go anywhere. This is, you know, one of the great friends of the show is a guy named Dr. Aaron Cariotti. He comes from the University of California, Irvine. He coined the phrase, and I love it. He called it a biostate. You are seeing the birth of a biostate before your eyes. Now, again, I'd say a prayer. You know, hopefully this will not pass and will not become a reality, but it's looming. I think COVID-19 did a lot to put into place some of these possible future protocols. Hey, let me share something else with you here. This is something I almost didn't want to talk about, but I just feel I have to. I do not like dealing with some of the darker stories that unfold, especially when it comes to children. And for centuries, children have been exploited for one reason or another, right? Whether it's labor or sex or whatever it might be. They've been pressed into forced labor. They've been sold into slavery, you know, used for sexual gratification. Charles Dickens wrote about it in his novel, Oliver Twist. And the Industrial Revolution, of course, took for granted that children would be cheap, easy, expendable labor, right? And they were used in that fashion. Here in the U.S., though, the child labor laws of the 1930s thankfully put an end to that. But it doesn't mean that kids aren't still being, you know, they're still not in danger of being exploited. In fact, we've seen just recently an explosion of stuff happening where it's clear that children are being used simply to make a buck. I don't know if you've seen this story or not. The Spanish fashion house, Balenciaga, they recently had a series of ads where kids are standing amidst all these different items. And there's one kid who apparently has drawn a picture of the devil and someone being dismembered. Another one has a picture of a girl. And in the photo, there's a copy of the Supreme Court ruling in the case of the U.S. versus Williams, which was on the federal child pornography laws. And there's also an ad with kids and teddy bears that are outfitted in bondage gear. So Kim Kardashian, she's done a lot of work for Balenciaga and recently was seen in Paris with, you know, this bondage headdress on. And so is her 9-year-old daughter. So it's just kind of, you know, maybe she's making a fashion statement. Maybe there's nothing more to it. It turns out that the brand's chief designer is quite literally a Satanist. One of the reasons I wanted to talk about that. I didn't realize it as I looked into the story. I said, really? A Satanist? And also appears to be into cannibalism. So I thought we could talk a little bit about it. I mean, just a cautionary tale. The president of the National Center on Sexual Exploitation is going to join me, Patrick Truman. Do yourself a favor. Check out online some of this stuff. You can go to endsexualexploitation.com. Org. You may not realize this. I interviewed a girl. I actually won an award for this conversation I had with her, who was trafficked. And you never think that it happens in your backyard. Well, in the backyard of Green Bay's network headquarters at the time for Relevant Radio, women were being trafficked. Not in Relevant Radio's literal backyard, but in that community. You know, there's some trucker stop she was telling me about. And it's just like, you don't think it can happen, you know, in your wholesome, clean little town, right? You might be surprised. Hey, Patrick, thank you for your patience today. Good afternoon. It's good to have you on the air with me.
I'm very good to be here. Thank you.
You know, just to put this in perspective, and again, I really deliberate over whether or not to bring such darkness and negativity sometimes, but it's a reality, and I think we need to shine light on that darkness to scatter it. This is a horrific abuse that's taking place. And I don't know whether it's me, I'm just seeing more of it, or maybe you can give me a perspective on it. Is there a sudden explosion of sexual exploitation now coming to light? Is it getting worse? What's going on, and where are we today?
Well, it is getting worse, even though there are many good things happening. I don't want to leave people with no hope. But child pornography is being normalized in society, and there is a reason for that. People probably forget that both federal and state laws prohibit adult hardcore pornography and child pornography. Now, for several years, I was head of the prosecution section at the U.S. Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., in charge of prosecuting adult pornography and child pornography.
Wow.
But when we left that unit, Bill Clinton was president, and they stopped prosecuting adult pornography. And what those of us who were prosecuting said, all right, if you're not going to prosecute adult pornography, child pornography will proliferate.
Yeah.
Because you'll be training people to love pornography. And the way pornography works, you just go to one genre after another. You get tired of what you see, you move to something harder. And then people eventually get to child pornography. And here, I'll just leave you with one final statistic. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the quasi-governmental agency that takes reports on child pornography, in 2008 had 600,000 images reported. 3 years ago, they had 60 million child pornography images reported. So it's not getting better.
Wow.
It's getting light years worse.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I remember several years ago, I had a cyber detective from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on the air with me, and we were just talking about cybercrime, and it led into what he's seeing. He says, you know, pornography, what we're now finding is that pornography is leading to child pornography. I mean, and to your point, he says, I can't tell you how many individuals I've seen who dabbled in one thing, and then it led to something else, and in the end, it led to child pornography. And it only makes sense. We're seeing more images, and we're seeing these numbers begin to increase. My question to you, though, is where are the kids coming from who are pictured in these ads? Is it the parents that do this? I mean, what ultimately happens? And do the parents consent to this? I mean, how does it work?
Some parents take pictures of their own children. Many of them do, because there's websites that will pay for those images. Some of these children are from third world countries. Some of them from second world countries. You have people from the Ukraine. We get a lot of pictures coming from Ukraine.
Yep.
We get a lot of pictures from the Middle East and the East. But another source, and parents and grandparents should be aware of this, one source of a huge amount of child pornography in America and throughout the world is kids taking pictures of kids.
Hmm.
Because every parent gives their kid a cell phone today, and kids in grade school are taking pictures of themselves and sending them to their friends, the boys are asking the girls, send me something back. And they pressure them, and that peer pressure becomes so great, the girl will take a picture and send that back. Where do you think that image ends up when that girl is put on the chopping block and is not favored by the rest of the kids? It goes up on the internet, and there are sites that pay for that. So you're getting this child-on-child pornography flourishing throughout the world.
Yeah, it's horrific. I think about our southern border here in the United States, And these drug cartels, I'm sure, are not just pumping fentanyl across the border. I'm sure they're also bringing over a lot of children as well. Are we seeing an influx of human trafficking across our southern border, and in particular with children?
No question about it. The sex trafficking is overwhelming. And people don't want to say anything about it because, you know, it now is such a political issue. But we have to stop that. We just can't let this outrage go on. Yeah. But basically what we have to do is get back to enforcing the laws. We have laws on the books to stop this. I was at the Justice Department to my old section that I used to work in right. 5 years ago. And I asked them, do you prosecute adult pornography anymore? And they said, no, we're overwhelmed with child pornography. And we can't even prosecute child pornography of older children, 12, 13-year-olds, because there's so much prepubescent children. They've just let it go crazy. So long. It's terrible.
So what do you make of Kim Kardashian and Balenciaga and what they're doing? Are they just trying to make a statement? Is that innocent at the heart of this, or is there something else underneath all of that?
No, it's the normalization of child pornography, and that's just one example. You know, pedophilia used to be something that would turn people off. There's a movement in the world to call these people not pedophiles, but child attracted persons. You're not a pedophile. You're just attracted to children. Right. So it's okay. And this is a worldwide movement that we're seeing. And it's all because of the proliferation of pornography that breaks down human inhibitions. And the children are the victims.
Yeah. You know, are the laws regarding sexual exploitation of children, are they strong enough? You say we have them on the books. We just need to enforce them. Is, you know, are they sufficient as you see them right now, or do we need to amp them up?
Well, it isn't. See, it will never get better unless you're also willing to prosecute adult pornography, because we're training kids growing up today to love pornography.
Yeah.
And eventually many of them get into child pornography. But, you know, it's more than that. The laws are a teacher. And when you strictly enforce the law, as we once did, people know there's something wrong with pornography. Now, today, if you say, oh, pornography, oh, that's bad. They'll say, oh, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But and the other thing, too, is if you're not willing to prosecute adult pornography, you won't be prosecuting children who are 17, 16, 15, 14, because you'll say, well, gee, they could be an adult, so we're not going to prosecute them. Or you're going to get, like the Justice Department is right now, so overwhelmed with the prepubescent child pornography that they don't have time to do the other. We have to enforce all the pornography laws, or the laws themselves become useless.
Here's the problem with it, though. I mean, this is like pornography is like a drug. I mean, we have a pornified society. And it is super addictive, right? It is super addictive, and we see the bad fruit of it, where it leads. And we're talking today about child exploitation. But maybe we need to get back to somehow approaching the bad seed of all this, the root of it, and get help for those individuals that struggle with pornography and somehow address this porn culture. I don't know if that'll be the case. I almost feel like the toothpaste is out of the tube right now. Kind of hard to get it back when... take a look at the content that's out there, how many images are out there, how much money is being profited off it, the platforms that have it. It is frightening. I the next generation, the generation after this, I think they're going to really see the byproduct of it. But your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're right. It just the future looks bleak. However, there are many good things happening. We've met with Apple, for example, and pointed out to them it takes 27 steps to turn on the parental controls on your Apple phone. And we worked with them for 5 years, and now they've changed that so that the parental controls are easier to put on. We worked with Google. Google used to hand out hundreds of thousands of these small laptop computers to school kids all around the world every year. But even though they had pornography controls on them, they wouldn't turn them on at the factory. So you're giving a kid a porn shop, because all he has to do is type in the word porn and he's got a porn shop. Google, after 7 years, agreed in the last year to turn the parental control on. So you don't get pornography by typing in those words. You have to figure out how to change the settings. And so good things like that are happening. Instagram, place on Instagram, and we brought traffic victims in to meet with them, and they've changed. Well, so good things are happening for the future.
Pat, I only have a moment or two left. I want to sneak a call or two, and I want to get Toby in Richmond, Virginia. He's a teen who's struggling right now with porn. Hi, Toby. Good afternoon.
Hello. So I'm a teen right now, and I struggle with, like, masturbation, and I was just, like, wondering if you had, like, any advice. Like, should I, like, exert that energy in, like, somewhere like fitness?
No, it's a good question. Well, Toby, you know, you're a teenager. You're not alone, and you face a challenge I think a lot of people, when I was your age, probably never, you know, faced. I mean, if pornography was rampant, you know, who knows? You know, how different the trajectory of my life or anybody else's life could have been. So if you're Catholic, I want to suggest you get to confession. You know, use that sacrament frequently. You'll get special graces with that. But if not, some advice for you. And Pat, I'm going to let you give him some advice. He says, should he target some of that energy that he has towards athletics? I think that's a great idea. But what else would you suggest?
Well, I think you have to limit your time on your cell phone and your computer. And you have to have blocking software. One of the great companies is Covenant Eyes that has monitoring software you can put on your phone and your computer. And you can ask your dad or your best friend or someone to be the monitor. So every site that you go to, that person gets a report. What happens is that people don't go to porn sites because they don't want their friend or their dad to think the less of them. So that works. And so you have to have these controls. And I agree that, you know, if you're a Catholic, the sacraments will give you the grace to turn away. Amen. It's not an easy struggle. No one says it is. But it'll only get worse unless you do something now.
And Toby, I'm so glad you called and that you're addressing this at your age. There's a great website my producer Maggie just put on my radar. It's called moralrevelation.com. A revolution. Moralrevolution.com. Moralrevolution.com. Check that out, okay? Moralrevolution.com. Definitely talk to somebody about it. Don't keep this hidden because you'll be glad you did. I had a friend who was involved in pornography. It led him to strip clubs, ended up losing his business, ended up losing his wife, ended up even in jail at one point in time. So, you know, we're here for you. We'll be praying for you, Toby. I appreciate the call. Pat, thank you for what you do. I am very grateful for the fact that you are out there making a difference. And if people want to follow your work or learn a little bit more, the best way to do that, I'm assuming, is just endsexualexploitation.org?
That's it.
All right, brother. Well, keep up the good work. We'll talk soon. I know the Super Bowl is right around the corner, and this often gets a lot of attention at that point in time there as we see much more about trafficking. But we'll talk again soon, okay? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's Patrick Truman, president of the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Check him out at endsexualexploitation.org. When I return, are you a true crime fan? You probably are. I know I saw a stat last night. When it breaks down to men and women, who likes it more? I'll give you the answer, and I'll give you a stunning stat, too, right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You know, we receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters Studio Line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor could support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Serial killers are in many ways a uniquely American phenomenon.
That's Joe Berlinger. He's often known as the godfather of true crime.
We have 5% of the world's population, and we have had 67% of the world's documented serial killers.
We're fascinated by the idea of an ordinary person capable of extraordinary evil.
You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, what is it about our fascination with crime, true crime, that is? You know, I don't know whether you've got cable or you stream stuff or you listen to podcasts. I heard one of the number one podcasts are true crime podcasts, right? And I'll be honest, my wife hates when I talk about her on there, but I'm going to throw her under the bus. she watches these true crime shows. I mean, they're always on. And I'm like, who's killing who, right? I mean, there's always something going on. And I laughed because I was my wife and I, we were away with our executive vice president of programming here at the network, and we had gone away with Patrick Madrid and with Mike Kendall and some other people, and we were all sitting around one night, and we were talking, and Mike, my colleague, says, "Oh, my wife loves these. She loves these." I always say the same thing to her. You know, who's on trial now? What are the police doing? Who's killing who? You know, it's he calls them, you know, who's murdering who? Or he calls the shows murder. And there's a fascination with him. It seems that women, I don't know, seem to have a greater focus on these. You know, you think maybe it'd be men? No, not at all. The percentage of true crime listeners are women, about 73% female. That's a pretty significant stat. 73. I don't know if you follow these, if you're into them. Gentlemen, I don't know if your wife or your girlfriend likes to watch it. Why is it? What is it about these scenarios that seem to pique a woman's curiosity or attention more than anything else? Why do they find it so fascinating? I'll watch something on space, and my wife is bored to death, right? She puts these on, and I'm like, I could take it or leave it. I could care less, you know. I probably feel about these the way she feels about me watching something in space, right? But you got these cases of Gabby Petito just recently. Remember that? It captured America's attention. Of course, O.J. Simpson. I mean, you go through the litany of different things. You had Casey Anthony. We have this case of four college students who were violently murdered in their rental home in Moscow, Idaho. And it's baffling investigators. I'm sure they have more info than they're revealing right now. But people are wondering what is going on, right? Here you've got, you know, six people in a home, four of them stabbed to death. How do you not hear screams? How do you not, you know, wake somebody else up in the middle of the night when you go from room to room, you know, plunging your knife into someone's heart and throat? It's bizarre. Fox News, according to them, police have been collecting evidence now for the last 2 weeks. They have had a huge amount to go through. I saw footage this morning of them taking, I think, the vehicles of those who were murdered from the home so they can look at the possible evidence in those. They don't have a murder weapon. They don't have a motive, and they don't have any suspects. And of course, America wants to know more. I surf the channels here. And there's always a report on this. Somebody's talking about it. You take a look at Twitter, you take a look at the news media, there's a fascination with this. The case is being followed by a lot of people, as well as people who are attracted to these true crime stories. Lots of theories that are out there. I forget the name of the guy that was just arrested in that case of the two girls walking on the railroad tracks. Another case that people had all these different theories on. These two girls went missing. They ended up being murdered. I think they just made an arrest in that case of a guy. And that was a case that took a long, long time to conclude. So some of the most popular podcasts that are out there related to true crime, and a lot of interest is coming from women. There was a recent study. It found that based on Spotify's podcast metrics, right, women's interest in true crime, it rose by 16% in 2019. The same study also examined Amazon book reviews. They asked participants about their book preferences. They found while men were most likely to read stories about war or gangs, women always seem to gravitate towards true crime. And I think sometimes the bigger something gets, the bigger it gets. I think as more of these shows come on, 20, you know, ABC does one, the ID Channel does one, Discovery does one. You know, you get exposed and maybe it becomes more addictive. I don't know. There was another survey done by ABC that found that true crime's rising popularity, the reason it's gaining traction is because of the demographic, more women. One of the biggest subjects of true crime, guess what it is? Gabby Petito? No. OJ? No. Casey Anthony? No. Is it Idaho? No. Ted Bundy. One of the biggest subjects of the true crime genre is Ted Bundy, a man who was convicted of killing more than 30 women. And there have been, gosh, how many documentaries about him? You know, and the biggest viewer of those films were, you know it, women, right? Of course, some men who also follow the stuff, but women for some reason are attracted to it more so. The question is why. I thought we'd talk about it today. Love your theory. Feel free to join us at 888-914-9149. Why are people fascinated with reading and researching about serial killers, for example? I know there are Catholics, devout Catholics, who are into it just as much, so your faith doesn't really make a difference in a whole lot of this. It holds their fascination. We've invited to join us today a friend of the program. He stops by quite often and gives us perspective on everything from drugs and crime. His name's Deacon Ernie Martinez. He's a deacon at Notre Dame Parish in Denver, Colorado, but he is Also, a narcotics police officer and an at-large representative of the National Narcotics Officers Association Coalition. He joins us today. Hey, Deacon, great to have you back. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Drew. How are you?
I'm well. I'm hanging in there. You know, I love your take on this. You know, I was deliberating. Who do we get to talk about this? Do we get a psychiatrist, psychologist on? Do you get an investigative reporter? Do you get a CSI guy? I'd love your take. I mean, this is your world. You live in the crime world. You're in a world where, you know, cases have got to be investigated and followed on a daily basis. And you also see what goes on the ugly and the nitty gritty side of life. I'd love your perspective. What is it that people are so fascinated by these true crime stories?
You know, I think it's a lot of things, but I think the main push of this is we all have this innate, God instilled need to seek the truth. Mm. And obviously by seeking the truth comes that virtue of curiosity, right? And, you know, we're all curious about things that we don't know. We're all curious about things that truly intrigue us. And quite frankly, I think, you know, the culture really tends to lead us toward, because it's so in our face anymore with 24-hour news cycles that there are so many things to follow. And because of that quality of wanting to seek the truth, I think people have this curiosity. What's going on? You know, you mentioned Ted Bundy. You know, Ted Bundy actually was arrested and escaped from Pickham County Jail in Aspen in the 70s. Wow. And, you know, he had a Colorado tie. You know, we have the JonBenet Ramsey case that's still unsolved, the murder of this little girl mm-hmm. in her basement of her house. We have all these open investigations that people want to seek the truth and ask why. What's going on through the perpetrator's mind that causes them to do this evil? And, you know, the thing is you're right. I've spent almost 40 years now looking at as a firsthand witness on the bad things that happen in society, on the human person at its absolute worst. And, you know, after all that time, I'm not an expert. I'm not a psychologist or anything, but I am a witness to what's happened. And quite frankly, what's happened is, you know, you scratch your head because the thing that's left at the end of the day is evil does exist. Yeah. And we have those examples throughout the day.
What are your thoughts on it? Just speaking of Ted Bundy here, and we'll grab some phone calls here and we'll talk more about it, but I was struck by a piece of audio that my producer Maggie was able to find saying that America really has more serial killers than anyone else. We're kind of the birthplace of them. What is it about our culture or our country or our laws that somehow has fomented such a proliferation of these serial killers?
Boy, that's a heavy question. from my perspective, I think what happens, obviously, we're the most free country in the world, and thank God for that.
Amen.
But because of that free country and that freedom, there's an exchange, and the exchange is that society has to collect itself with what we have in Constitution, with laws, but those laws allow a certain amount of freedom, and thank God for that. But that freedom comes the influence of evil. That freedom comes the influence of taking mind-altering drugs or you know, legal alcohol that tend to take people's inhibitions away to do what they do. We have this huge crisis of mental illness across the country that causes a lot of things to happen. A lot of people do some very terrible things to each other. You know, we just had that mass shooting in Colorado Springs at that club where, you know, so many people were killed, you know, unneedlessly.
Yeah.
Why does that happen? It happens because we live in a free society, but at the same time, it should illuminate the fact that, you know, America's fallen away from Christianity. America's belief in our Creator, our God, has totally waned. And, you know, the founding of our great country is in dire need to recapture faith in the public square. Not to say that evil is always going to be present. Obviously it is. It has from time immemorial, from the time Adam and Eve decided to walk away from God. right? But at the same time, there's that redemptive value with faith and with the relationship that we have with God.
You got it.
So it's that, it's a balance of curiosity with, you know, with reason, and that reason is a virtue that God has given all of us.
Hey, Deacon, I love it. Thank you for that perspective. Let me take a short pause. I'm up against the clock here. When we come back, let's take some phone calls too. We'll talk about it. If you're just joining us, we're taking a look at true crime, the rising popularity of it on everything from television to books and documentaries. Why America seems to be obsessed with true crime, and why, in some respects, women have a special affinity for it. That conversation and more continues right after this.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That's just 10 minutes away. Call one other person, send them a quick text or an email or a smoke signal or however you communicate, right? Some sign language, have them carry a pigeon. Right? Go ahead and have them join us. Great time to get together and pray. We're seeing such fruit from the chaplet, and be a wonderful work of mercy to tell others about it. If you're just joining me, we're taking a look at America's obsession with true crime. It's gaining popularity. If you surf your TV set, man, you'll see so many different channels dedicated to true crime. There's stations, there's a channel called True Crime, right? There's the ID channel. You take a look at all the specials that are done. True crime audiences are about 73% female. It doesn't surprise me. I know a lot of women who, when they get together, say, oh, I love watching that. So the question is why? Why should female listeners, viewers, readers, why should they be so drawn to stories of women being beaten or shot or stabbed or murdered, right? The stories have, you know, I guess in some respects, some psychiatrists say, you know, they create your heart's to race. Does it create a sense of fear, you know, where you're looking over your shoulder now, you know? Women tune in whenever their favorite podcaster uploads a new episode, and they listen in horror. You know, maybe, I don't know. I don't know why it's so intriguing. Women account for roughly about 70% of serial killer victims. So, I mean, men get killed too, but fundamentally, 7 out of 10 of the serial killer victims are women. That stat comes from between, you know, 1985 and 2019. So the majority of true crime podcasts, especially, chronicle stories of female victims being murdered or assaulted. Although, you know, most often it's thought that women enjoy true crime because they think they can learn how to survive, how they can identify a killer. I asked my wife, I said, what is it about you find this intriguing? She goes, I'd like to see how the police do their investigative work and how they solve crimes really from nothing. And that's a valid point. So I think there's lots of different reasons. My guest today is Deacon Ernie Martinez. He is in law enforcement. He's a narcotics police officer and an at-large representative to the National Narcotic Officers Association Coalition. And Deacon, it's good to have you back. Let's jump right into the phone and we'll talk a little bit more about women's obsession and true crime in general. Tracy's listening in Tarpon Springs, Florida. Tracy, hi. You're on the air with Deacon Martinez.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call. And that was exactly the point I was going to make. 73% of watchers are women, and around 73% of victims of true crime are women. I think it's a subconscious thing where we know that statistically we're more likely to be a victim of a crime at the hands of a man. And this is something that our body or our mind is drawing us to watch so that we can know that this could happen to me and I need to be vigilant more than a man needs to be.
And I guess from a young age, women are told, you know, these horror stories, these urban legends, you know, they're always warned not to walk alone. There's almost a healthy paranoia, you know, instilled on women to make sure they're safe. Maggie, you were saying that when your girlfriends get together, you all have a different reaction when you meet a guy.
Yeah, no, it's true. I used to be in a Bible study with some girlfriends when I lived down in Tennessee, and one in particular just was so drawn to true crime and listening to what she called murder podcasts. And it would be so funny because I, like, here was an instance. I remember we went out to dinner one night and there was a guy in a booth near us who looked at a little like disheveled and maybe distraught. And my brain immediately went to, oh, this restaurant is right next to some of the major hospitals. I wonder if he just, you know, went through something or a loved one's in the hospital. Right. And she immediately went, look at that guy. He looks crazy. I bet he's gonna, you know, X, Y, or Z. And I was just like, it's so interesting how, like, is this a self-fulfilling prophecy? Yeah. I don't know. For even though I'm a woman, I don't feel drawn to watch these things. Yeah. I would rather think about how could I defend myself. Like, I'm not going to fill myself with the ideas of a serial killer.
Right.
I'd rather fill my head with the thoughts of a gladiator.
Okay. I can buy it.
You know what I mean?
A gladiator. I like that. All right. I like it, Meg. Deacon, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think both are accurate. Maggie, I like that gladiator piece because you really got to prepare yourself mentally, especially as a woman this day and age. You know, one thing in my law enforcement career I could rest my this statement is this: you can't judge a book by its cover.
Right.
I've arrested murderers that you would think, man, I can't believe this person committed a murder. You know, you can't put an 8x10, this is a murder, this is what a murderer looks like, or this is how a murderer acts, or this is how a serial rapist would act. I mean, they come in all shapes, sizes, and colors, and everything in between. So as a woman in this type of society we live in this day and age, you got to have what I told my daughters and my wife when they're out and about, have your head on a swivel. But at the same time, don't be overly concerned where you're going to, you know, lock up and not enjoy life either, right? But, you know, you got to have that reasonability. You got to have that awareness. And I think there's a lot of truth to watching and listening to crime stories, that something that we could learn, how to be prepared. You know, what did this person do that maybe they could have did a little differently not to be an easy victim or an easy target, right? You know, whether that's getting a date raped drug in your drink, or, you know, going somewhere alone, not being in a group, those types of things. So I think there's a lot to be said by not only the caller, but also by Maggie.
Yeah, you know, Deacon, I think you bring up a number of really good points, too. When I watch some of these shows, I'm often amazed at why people commit these crimes, right? And I'm sure you've seen everyone from the humble little housewife to the teacher to whoever, you know, committing these types of crimes as well. But I always say to my wife, why do you have to murder somebody? Why not just leave? Get out of the relationship. It's just, right? I don't know what triggers people or motivates this type of behavior in a lot of people. But, I mean, I think life is just as bizarre as some of this fiction, for sure. And I know you've seen it. Let's take another call. Janice is in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Janice, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew, and your guest. It sounds great. Yes. And your guest before on pornography. I just want to make a quick comment that Ted Bundy, and I saw the autobiography, whatever, on the TV. I'm not into this stuff, these killing movies, whatever they got going on. But anyway, they said, Ted Bundy said, don't let your children get into pornography. That's how I started with Playboy under my bed. I said, well, there's your family again. Where's the parents? Yeah. Where are these people? You know, break down a society, break down the family, break down a society, and here we are.
Janice, thanks. I'm going to leave you there because I have less than a minute. Deacon, such a good point. You're in law enforcement. Is pornography, are you seeing that drive arise in this type of deviant behavior and crime?
Yeah, I think there's a common denominator with a lot of people that have committed some cruelly acts of violence, especially sexually violent, with pornography and how it's permeated society and permeated everything across the board, even the magazine racks and those types of things that come across your phone. You had ads that, you know, lead people to start clicking and clicking and clicking. So it does attract a lot of issues.
Well, thank you for making time for us, as always. I always appreciate your contribution. I know sometimes it's short notice. I'm going to pray the chaplet. I'll pray for you, Deacon, okay? Chaplet is straight ahead.
Thank you very much, and God bless you.